Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:06, that is Pacific Standard Time, and today is January 9th. And today, and specifically over the last 3 days, we've had some quite acute action in the Chinese yuan, or the renminbi. And this is a big question. What exactly is it that the Chinese want to achieve with their monetary policy? Or at least their policy towards their currency, to be more specific. They intervened on Thursday to try and strengthen up the currency and to try and deter short sellers. But it has weakened again quite abruptly on Friday and followed through on that, at least moderately so, in here today. There are, of course, two arguments. One is that the Chinese are intervening because they want to try at least and stem the exit of capital from the country, and by acting to support the currency, they are at least partially addressing that problem. But on the other side of that equation is the fact that the manufacturing sector is badly in need of a weaker currency. They are driving through a rationalization of a number of key sectors that have been responsible for a large part of the growth in the economy for the last few decades. So that really does require a weaker currency in order to add an additional strut of growth to the argument, rather than simply relying on the real estate and infrastructure development to drive growth. That is largely behind them in terms of the growth story. When we look at the trend, we can quite clearly see that it is somewhat overbought, or that the dollar is somewhat overbought relative to the trend mean. I think that there's absolutely no question about that. But of course, this is really the onshore currency. When we look at the offshore currency, which is, from perspective of international investors, more liquid, then it unwound the vast majority of its overextension. But that was a large move that we saw last week. What we can probably anticipate is now that we're going to get some ranging. If the Chinese central bank is serious about supporting the currency, then they will allow it to weaken back towards 7 and then hit it again. That would really help to drive the point home that they want to at least slow the pace of the currency's downtrend, and not just over the short term, but perhaps over the medium term. A sustained move below the trend mean would be required to really question that the dollar's dominance over the medium term. And of course, when we look at the fact, and it is really very simple, the US is raising interest rates and just about nobody else is. And perhaps the only real fundamental you have in the currency markets is interest rate differentials, and they are moving steadily in favor of the US. But with some clarity, or at least an effort to support the currency, then the A-share market has steadied, and it has steadied exactly where it needed to in the region of the trend mean, and that is rather positive from a not just a short-term but potentially a medium-term perspective, that we're not about to get a return to the acute volatility that characterized trading in 2015 and the beginning of 2016. If the onshore market, the mainland market, is doing a bit better, well, the H shares, which are the Chinese listed Hong Kong shares, excuse me, Hong Kong listed Chinese shares, let me get that correct, they have bounced from the region of 9,000. That's the upper side of the underlying range, and this is a relatively similar sized range to that that was posted early in 2016. And of course, a sustained move above 10,000 would really help to confirm that demand is back in the driving seat beyond the very short term here. There was a question a subscriber sent through about the demonetization that has occurred in India, and it has been enormously discomfiting for the majority of consumers. There are going to be state elections pretty soon in India, and that I think will be the best barometer that we have for just what the ordinary man in the street is thinking about demonetization. But it has been generally positive for the banking sector. With so many people needing to open bank accounts now, that will help to shore up their deposit basis. But in order to identify that a very clear return to demand dominance, then that 20,000 level will have to hold. It will have to break the short-term progression of lower rally highs, and it will have to move back above the 200-day moving average. And it hasn't done that quite yet, so it is too early yet to say that we are out of the woods entirely with regard to India. In the currency markets today, the dollar was a little bit weaker. The euro has held around the 105 area. It's almost up to 106. It is the 106 area is representative of the progression of lower rally highs, and a sustained move above 106 would begin to suggest that we are getting more than short-term steadying in the euro. What we also do, though, need to keep an eye on are the government bond yields, and what is increasingly looking likely is that that treasuries are unwinding their short-term overbought condition. I highlighted the Portuguese bonds on Friday. They were a bit firmer. The yield was a little bit lower in here today, but it really does need to sustain a move below the trend mean to question that there isn't going to be yield expansion over the medium term. When we look at the 10-year future on for the US, then there is a deep oversold condition, and that is now being unwound. So certainly there has been a lot of good news priced into the stock market, and of course that is bad news for the bond markets. But at the same time, we can also see very, very clearly in the bond futures that there is a very deep oversold condition evident. And even if one is a strong advocate of the fact that of the potential that the 35-year bond bull market is over, we can still be irrational and say that there is an oversold condition, and that even in a bear market environment you can get a reversionary rally. The big question is to what extent the price is going to encounter resistance below or in the region of the 200-day moving average, and will it then decline to a new reaction low? That is the very big question, and I think we will have it answered perhaps in the first quarter. In the meantime, the likelihood is that we are going to see some additional upside for bond prices. And it is interesting that gold and bonds fell in unison, and they are now rallying together. So gold prices have broken the short, very, very short-term progression of lower rally highs. The very big question is to what extent gold prices are going to be able to sustain a move above the trend mean. But in the meantime, it is looking likely that we are seeing prices moving back up to at least test the region of the trend mean, and that would represent a rally of just less than $50. Gold is not leading on the upside. The gold mining shares are. They had already moved back up to their trend mean last week, and we're getting a little bit of a pause right now in terms of those gold share indices, but they have broken the progression of lower rally highs. Platinum is outpacing the advance in gold, and it was in positive territory just a bit more in here today, and is now pushing right up towards the region of the trend mean. It hasn't quite moved back above it yet, but the big 1,000 level represents a bit of a Rubicon for platinum, and if it can sustain and move above it, well then the potential for a credible argument that platinum is back in the demand dominated environment would be easier to make. When we look at the precious metals, then there is arguments for recovery. But when we look at the oil market, then it was weaker in here today. And we had that downside Q reversal on, I think it was Tuesday of last week. and prices then subsequently rallied. We did not get downside follow-through, but we are getting it today. Prices are down about $2, and when we look at that on a weekly basis, there is this overbought condition relative to the trend mean. Oil is in a difficult scenario because there is a lot of additional supply becomes economic in the region of $60. We know that that's the case because when we look at the futures curve, it's very flat. That prices today, or for the March 2017 contract, are $54, and the December 2018 contract are $56. It's less than a $2 difference between prices on, and this is for a commodity that can trade $2 in a day, just like it did today. That will tell you that there are plenty of people willing to hedge out their exposure at today's prices, which would suggest that that is where their economies of scale are. That's where it's economic for them. That's where they can make money. And that if prices go substantially above 60, then they will simply increase their supply and hedge that as well. So that then raises big questions because if unconventional supply is economic at these levels, then isn't it arbitrary as to how much supply the OPEC cartel can take out of the market? They are hurting at these levels. There is a lot of their supply is not economic at these levels because their economies of scale are no longer simply dependent on the cost of extraction. They have to also consider the cost of their social programs. And with rising populations and increasing largesse, those social programs have become very, very expensive indeed. So I suspect that what we are most likely to have is a very volatile environment for oil, and that when we look back over time, that certainly $40 is not economic for the vast majority of marginal supply. But when we get down to that level, then some of that supply will have to come out of the market, and that's where we'll start to get support coming back in. But it is going to be difficult for prices to sustain and move back up towards the $100 level because so much supply becomes economic at those levels, and it really would require a big geopolitical event to get prices back up to those levels. And it is quite similar then to what we saw in the previous bear market, that it was during the Gulf War that we had a big spike in oil prices, but between, or I guess around that event, prices were relatively depressed. That I think is something that is largely a tailwind for the stock market. The S&P 500 was reasonably quiet in here today. It is a little bit overbought relative to the trend mean. The trend mean pretty much coincides with the previous peak right now, so it's about 6% above the trend mean, but this is certainly not an historically wide overextension. It has had bigger overextensions, and not least in percentage terms previously. Obviously, the higher prices go, the greater the likelihood is that you're going to get some reversion. But having gone through a volatile ranging phase, then we have had now an explosion up out of that range. The likelihood of very big sharp pullbacks is now less than it was inside the range. We are back in a demand-dominated environment, and as long as the price is finding support in the region of the trend mean, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And despite the fact that there is a growing risk of a reversion, there is nothing on the chart to say that that reversion will not take place from a somewhat higher level. The sector that is perhaps giving us the clearest evidence that a reversion to the mean is at least partially unfolding is the banking sector. And that had a much more explosive breakout. It is substantially more overbought relative to the trend mean. And then there is potential that we're going to enter a rangy phase, as so that a lot of the good news is priced that has been priced in, actually starts to translate into value for these companies. What we're also starting to see is that the pace of M&A activity in the biotech sector is still really quite strong. And this is an index that has been ranging for most of a year, and it has held a progression of higher reaction lows since the election. It had a big spike higher on the election result. It found support at a progressively higher level, and it is starting to move higher. We are also starting to see that that smaller companies, particularly those in the immuno-oncology sector, are giving us evidence that they are also firming from the region of the lower side of their respective ranges. There is increasing evidence that a number are finding support in the region of their trend means. So these are, and when we kind of look around the world and look for base formations, then biotech does represent a base formation, and not least because it had such a very clear downtrend in 2015 and did really not much of anything at all in 2016. And the gold mining sector has also come off very depressed levels. When we look at that over the long term, then we can see that prices, despite the fact that we had the big move up in the first half of last year, we've had a big pullback. The mining sector has also had a big pullback. And when we look at the dry ships index, and I'm pulling up a share rather than the index, we can see that they are incredibly depressed. Certainly they are largely dependent on what happens with the oil price, because a lot of these companies don't just do containers, but they also do tankers. And there has been a lot of supply of new ships has come onto the market over the last couple of years, and that has driven prices down to previously unimaginable levels. Then there is the potential that this is a sector that has been out in the cold for a very long time. And I showed a number of shares on Friday in the uranium sector, and uranium miners are also gaining additional interest. So when we look around and we know that we are already 7 years into a bull market, entering perhaps an eighth year of the bull market, then there are areas that are still depressed, and there are areas that are really just beginning to show signs of life. So, and by and large, they are in the old economy, they're in the resources sector. And biotech is an outlier in that regard. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.